Hello, this is a podcast from Peter Hill Explains, where I'm just getting some practice and reading the next section of Chapter 1 of this Year 8 textbook. This is about scientific methods. Section 1.2 is secondhand data, page 11 of this Pearson book. They've got the introduction text. You don't always need to run your own experiments to obtain accurate data. Sometimes it's impossible to collect it yourself and you will need to get your data from somewhere else. It's easy to find secondhand data, particularly from school resource centres or internet. However, you need to be careful because some secondhand data you find will be out of date or incorrect. Yes, I suppose the aim is to get accurate data there. Accurate means close to the actual true value, and it's not necessarily that the data is incorrect, it is invalid for the purpose. So there's problems that it may be numerically significant, may be questionable, it may not be reliable, or its evidential significance may be misrepresented or not appropriate for you. Data that's ready to go. You cannot always run your own experiments or take your own observations and data. This could be for a number of reasons. One, many experiments require training as well as beyond year 8 science. This is why science is offered as a subject throughout secondary school at university. You learn a bit more each year, allowing you to run more and more of your own investigations to collect your own data. Two, many experiments require equipment that is not available at school because of its expense, size, maintenance requirements. For example, your school might not have a powerful optical telescope that allows you to see the moon and planets, but it won't have, you may have that, but it won't have a radio telescope, which allows you to see deeper into the universe. Likewise, your school will have optical microscopes, but not powerful electron microscopes. Okay, well, this, I think that's a bit of a confusing thing. A radio telescope sees a different wavelength rather not deeper. Other experiments take far more time than is available in year 8 science. For example, a forest takes many years to grow, but after a bushfire and you will need that long to study it. Genetic disease passes from generation to generation, so studying the inheritance of them will take generations to do properly. Fourth point, other observations can only be made in swamps, on top of mountains, in frozen Antarctica, at the bottom of the ocean, or in space. It's unlikely that you'll ever go there, especially to run a science experiment. If you can't run your own experiment, then you need to turn to second-hand data. Second-hand data is information that has already been found out by other scientists. This data and the scientific analysis of it can easily be found in textbooks and encyclopedias, scientific magazines, journals, and on the internet. All the information is second-hand data. You might be using the data right now in one of belonged to someone else. Strange. Improving second-hand data. Second-hand data is easy to find, but it's not always accurate. Simple checks can ensure that the data you can be trusted. How old is the data? Some data never changes. For example, ice melts at 0 degrees at sea level and will always do so. Oh dear. Hence, it doesn't matter where you get the information from or how old the information is. However, other data quickly becomes out of date and will not be accurately described what is happening right now. For example, climate change is happening much quicker than scientists first thought. As in figure 1.222 shows, many glaciers are melting fast. And the data describing them must be as recent as possible for it to be accurate. Data from 1 year ago can be so inaccurate that any predictions based on it are bound to be wrong. You can check how old data is by finding the imprint page of the book or magazine, such as shown in figure 1.2.3. This page is usually found in the first few pages of the book, magazine, or journal. Websites should have a date they were created and last updated at the bottom of the opening page. Where did it come from? Encyclopedias, scientific journals, and scientific textbooks are usually trusted to provide accurate data. Well, just chuck out textbooks because they're not cited. There's no oversight. So if they make a statement, you can't actually check out where the statement comes from. That's my big bugbear. Now, however the data may be old, data can be trusted if it comes from respected scientific magazines like New Scientist, Cosmos, Scientific American, and National Geographic. Many of these magazines will be found in your school's resource centre or your local library. Well, yeah, basically, but they're still... referenced, or they don't have citations. Okay, next thing is, what is a URL? The internet will probably be your first choice when looking for data and information. However, some of what you find will be incorrect. Links that don't work are one sign of a suspicious site. More information comes from the last part of this, is its URL address referred as its domain. This is slightly confused. This tells you who creates the website and gives you some idea of whether it can be trusted or not. AustralianSites.au. The sites that have URLs Indian.au are based in Australia and need to meet Australian laws. The origin of other sites can be determined from their domain. Here are a few. Dear. Okay. Tim and the www. Before 89, only people able to use the internet were US military organizations such as CSIRO and various universities around the world. Indeed, I had very early access to the internet, which was only actually a few pages long. The links were a few pages long. In that year, Tim Burn-Lee, an English computer scientist working at CERN Laboratory in Switzerland, wrote software that allowed anyone to access the net. He called this system TIM. We know it as the World Wide Web. Educationalinstitutions.edu. URLs ending in .edu indicate the website is hosted by an educational institution such as a school, college, university, or even a kindergarten. Most of the material you find there can be trusted. Oh, dear. However, students can sometimes use the school server and EDU domain to construct their own personal web pages. An expert on brain surgery you found might be another Year 8 student. Governmentcommercialuse.com.net, .org. We'll just continue here. I'll just skip over these things. The need to compare. All second-hand data should be checked against data found in other sources. If it agrees, then it is probably accurate. If it doesn't match up, then you need to keep looking until you find sets of data that that do match. Data is best collected from a range of resources. In research assignments and projects, try to gather materials from at least one textbook, encyclopedia, a trustworthy internet site. Oh dear. Resource list. Ethics is a study of what is right or wrong. Ethics influences how we treat each other and how we want to be treated ourselves. Part of ethics is honesty and respect. We all want to be treated honestly and with respect, but this means we also need to treat others the same way. I think my view of ethics is being able to have a model of what your actions are at the moment and their likely consequences, and make a value judgment. So ethics, you've got to be able to run the situation into the future. And there's, I suppose, different systems of justice. My system, which I think is the most effective one, is the Rawlsian system of justice, where you can accept a consequence blind from any point. So you can put yourself in the student's position, the parent's position, the teacher's position, a bystander's position, and all judge it as just and fair. So that's my view of ethics. I don't necessarily think this is spot on. As scientists, we must be ethical in whatever we do. It's unethical for a scientist to pretend data is there when it actually comes from the work of somebody else. We need to be honest and need to respect the scientists of our team that originally found the data. For this reason, scientists include a resource list that shows where the information has come from. A resource list, sometimes called a bibliography, is a list of every textbook, encyclopedia, scientific journal, web page from which you collect your information or use to check the accuracy of the data you find. It's not really ethics, it's just being able to check the DNA, to cross the DNA. So if some information is found wrong, you can actually search forward and you can search the reliability or the origin of the data, but it's not necessarily ethics. Although each type of resource is listed in its own special way, you should try to include the following: authors, title, year and date of publication, publisher, and place. That's what you should include. My recommendation is cite this from me. So that's the end of 1.2. We'll see if we can get onto 1.3 here, because that was rather close. So the first one was first-hand data. The second is second-hand data. Third is processing and analysing data. PRAC reports should include the following sections. Heading. Your heading should include the name and dates of the investigation and list of the partners who were in your team. That's a good point there. Purpose. The purpose or aim is where you describe briefly what you're trying to do. Look, I seriously disagree with all of this, but a hypothesis. You generally have some idea of what will happen in the experiment from your previous experiences and what you have already studied in science. A hypothesis is an educated guess about what might happen in an experiment and what might be found out. That's very dangerous. It's really a hypothesis is a likely pattern that you are looking for, an event, and not necessarily what might be found out. That's probably overstepping the line in what a hypothesis is. So the last thing you want to do is say, look, the bottle will fall off the shelf, proving my theory that there's gremlins. So you look, and then the bottle falls off, and it's proven my theory that there's gremlins. It's a very dangerous path to go down. So I disagree with the way this is put. Materials. Now, this is a comprehensive list of everything used in the investigation. It includes chemicals used. Give all chemicals their correct names, formulas if known, the concentration and quantity of each. Equipment and apparatus used. Give all pieces of equipment their correct names. If the equipment comes in different sizes, specify them. 100 ml beakers. The M is a small M and the L is a large L. This breaks the convention where you use a capital L for litre. That's one of the conventions which are broken. And identifying the laboratory equipment and the way you draw a two-dimensional diagram. What I tell students is that you are to draw a piece of equipment with a minimum number of lines without your pencil leaving the page. So that's the way that they can draw a test tube. So it's being able to draw with the minimum number of lines, a two-dimensional line. The other thing I have for equipment when I tell students is that it's not a picture, it's actually a diagram, it's actually a symbol of a piece of equipment. So although it should be at the right scale, it's the symbol is a symbol of a beaker. So likewise, a beaker is drawn here. Again, the way they've drawn here in this picture, a Bunsen burner and even a retort stand has far too much detail and diagrams. So a retort stand, they've drawn the actual stand with actual width in the stand, the width of the poles. I would draw it with a single line. So they've drawn a correct tripod with just two legs and a single line. So for a tripod, they've drawn it with three single lines, which is correct, and they've kept the correct convention, not having any thickness of the legs. For a retort stand, which is a pole coming out of a piece of a base support, they've actually drawn a thickness to the rod coming up, and again, I don't really think that's necessary. I will have to talk to everyone about the way that I believe this should be done. Procedure. The procedure or method is a description of everything you did in the investigation, perhaps as a series of dot points. A label diagram is a good way to describe how the equipment is used. Indeed, there's a way from the Australian Drafting Standard to write this up very well. Writing a good procedure. This is a skill builder. The method you write should not be a story. It should not be a recipe. Recipes give a set of instructions for someone else. And should not be a recipe. Recipe gives you a set of instructions for someone else to follow. And do not record what you and your team did. Follow the guidelines and write a good method. So it shouldn't be a recipe. Write procedures in the past tense. Use words such as was and were. So, correct is a measuring cylinder was used to measure out 100 milliliters of water. Incorrect is use a measuring cylinder to measure out 100 milliliters of water. So that's why it's not a recipe. Your procedure should state what the equipment was used. What's correct is we used a trundle wheel to measure the length of the oval. So again, it would be equipment. I don't think you necessarily need it. The length of the oval was measured. We measured the length of the oval. So I suppose those last two were incorrect. Include quantities and units with all your measurements. The water was heated until it reached 40 degrees Celsius. What was not correct is the water was heated, or the water, we heated the water. Okay, results. This section includes a complete list of your observations and measurements. The best way you display your measurements is a table. Everyone says that. Again, Australian standards, drafting standards or laboratory standards are best to use in this. The book doesn't say this, but this is best to do. This is also where you start analysing your data, such as calculating averages. You might also present your data in different ways, such as spreadsheets, diagrams, or by plotting graphs. Okay, again, after this, a practical review. This section is sometimes called the discussion. This is where you discuss your experiment, often by answering a set of questions. Describe what happened in your investigation, explain why it happened, discuss what you think the results should show. Include second-hand data that relates to your investigation, describe a problem encountered that was done and overcome. Construct a conclusion, a brief summary of what you found in the investigation. Assess your investigation. This includes assessing your hypothesis accurate or not. Okay, suggesting alternative procedures that might improve the investigation for further experiments. Again, okay, now, this is, and so it's coming back again, and procedure. Now here it's got a resource list. The next line is resources. If second-hand data was used, then the report should end with a list of all resources, so that's bibliography, used in gathering information about the investigation. This list is sometimes called a bibliography. Writing a good conclusion. It says, as expected, the cooking oil flowed slower than water, but faster than honey. Okay. It's not a good conclusion. And bear in mind, these are year 8 students, 12-year-olds. The experiment was fun and we learnt a lot. That's bad. Tables and data. Quantitative data measurements is best shown in a table or computer spreadsheet. This makes patterns that may exist more obvious. It also gives a spatial orientation of the data. The data is written in a point such that its position down the page corresponds to the time, and the position across the page corresponds to what it relates to. So it's using, this is my view, it's creating spatial zones in the paper with which to write down numbers, so the actual position of the number relates to its interpretation. Going down here, units. The measurements in your result in tables and spreadsheets is useless unless you specify the units that are measured in science. Most of your measurements will use the metric or SI system, international units. Length is in meters, grams, mass is in grams, liquid volumes in liters, capital L, time in seconds, S. Other units such as newtons for weight, joules for energy depend on these units. However, measurements will sometimes be too big or too small to be sensibly measured with these units. This is where prefixes are used. Prefixes or letters or words sometimes appear before the symbol of the unit. And the most common prefix is small m for milli, small c for centri, centi, and small k for kilometres. And this is kilo, which means 1,000. And this is something I see over and over again. in signs everywhere, everyone puts a capital K for kilometres for some reason. And it's a small K. And the other thing we should say, there should be a space here. There's certain things, oh yes, they do this convention here, but nowhere else in the text. They've got converting units of list it is actually correct that you don't use commas in science. You know how you're taught 1,000 is 1,000. It's actually one sort of half space to indicate where the comma should be. So we don't use commas in 1,000. They've actually done this text, but they haven't actually said that. So that's good that they've achieved that. But what they haven't really shown too well is that the there's a space between the units and the prefix. So the unit. And so they have a correct km, small km here. The point here is that, say, if you're writing 100, let's say 1,000 kilometres, 1,300 kilometres, it's one half space, 3,000 big space, km. And say if you're doing that in a table, the km will be underneath the label of that column space or the cross space. And so you don't have to write the units again in a table. Graphing the data. This is a new section. Graphs are better than tables showing patterns in data. Five different types. There are bar graphs and column graphs that have a set of continuous numbers along one axis and discrete non-continuous quantities like colour or materials along the other axis. Okay, so if the other axis is just a list, I think the terminology is a chart. Okay. So they show a graph here. So I think it's actually best for students to say a graph. It gives you continuous rules on X and Y. It's actually, but we're a chart. The positions at the bottom are your arbitrary list, so you can change things around. Histograms have a set of continuous numbers along one axis and a set of continuous number ranges along the other axis. That is correct. So your histogram can't have gaps between your column chart. Set of graphs or pie charts show the appropriate percentages and, of different discrete quantities. When I mean sort of discrete quantities, this is classes of materials. Line graphs show a set of continuous numbers along both axes. Sector graphs, histograms, and bar and column graphs are useful but cannot be used to predict missing measurements or ones that were never actually taken in the experiment. Yeah, so a line graph is the poor man's computer. It's a visual computer. Only graphs can do this. This is where they've got the word chart and a chart and graphs confusing here, so I'd always reserve the word graph for a line graph. A line or curve best fit. Sometimes your data will produce perfect straight lines, not perfect curves. At other times your data may produce something which looks like a dot-to-dot picture. This is when you try to construct a line of best fit or a curve, so they're just instructing you to put a curve or a line through your data. In experiments that have error in them, this means that the points in your graph will have errors too and the positions are not exact. Connect up points in a dot-to-dot manner suggests that there's no error. Well, that's a good idea. It is more sensible to draw a straight or smooth line roughly through the curve at the centre of your points. These lines or curves are best fit make the patterns of your results easier to see. They also show and predict measurements. They've also correctly done here is extrapolations where you extend your line and dash. So you don't have data points there, you're extrapolating it. Okay, and it allows you to predict missing measurements or between values between where you measured. Figure 3.4 shows a graph plot of how a baby mouse grew in the first week. Line of best fit does not explain cooling water, explained by a curve. Line graphs can also be extrapolated. Extrapolation when a line graph is extended beyond the final measurement value, allowing you to predict further measurements. Things to do is draw a line graph with equal things above and below, and not to join dots to dots. It says the numbering must be equally spaced. The actual axis markings are not equally spaced, but jump. So this is an incorrect thing that people tend to do. Axis markings are aligned with the line. Axis markings do not match up with the line, but are instead over an interval. Oh, okay. So when you put a value 10, it must be under where the 10 goes. You 10 is not the 10th interval. Describing patterns, they have a line graph, decreasing, accelerating graphs here. And that's the end of this one. So I've told you two units of year 8 about putting data. Coming up after this is we've got practical review, planning and investigation. I'll do that next time, and that's ready after planning investigation, practical investigation. Let's go through here, and then after that it's the end of chapter one. So next time I'll do part 4 of the chapter. Now bear in mind that there are better things out there, or better ways of organizing your data, or teaching students. This is just a podcast of a textbook, and the idea is to gradually improve my ability to report these things, and to imagine students listening to this as a background to what's going through. Particularly, say, before they come to class, they'd probably listen to this podcast if they had time, and if not, I'd improve over time. So thanks for listening. Biddle speaking.